Silence was a tall, lean man in his 40s, with thinning hair and a thickening waistline. He didn't look like much on a view screen, but at close quarters he had a presence that was almost overpowering. Everyone in the room knew that he was a dangerous man, but now they knew why. There was a calm certainty to the man, a quiet directness. John Silence knew where he was going, and only a fool would have gotten his way. Investigator Frost was in her late 20s, tall and lively muscular, and casually intimidating, like all investigators. Trained from childhood to study and then kill aliens, or anything else that threatened the Empire. Even standing still and relaxed at her captain's side, she still looked ready to kill someone. Probably with her bare hands. Cold blue eyes blazed in a pale, controlled face, framed by auburn hair cropped close to the skull. She wasn't pretty, but there was a definite daunting glamour to her, attractive and scary at the same time. She stood at Silence's side, her hands comfortably near her weapons, as though she belonged there, and always had. After two such godlike beings, a mere mortal like V. Stelmach had to be a disappointment. And he was. A quiet, nondescript man, he looked more like some anonymous civil servant than an officer in the Imperial fleet. Presumably working as a security officer did that to you, even on the amazing Dauntless. He stood nervously a little behind Silence and Frost, his eyes darting from one new face to another, as though expecting to be sent out at any moment. And yet, this unimpressive little man had helped develop tech to control the deadly aliens known as Grendels, and together with Silence and Frost had survived dangerous missions that had killed many lesser men. So there had to be something to the man. Beckett gestured for the three of them to sit down on the remaining chairs, and they did so.
Now we're all here, I will proceed with the final briefing. You should all have been studying your general orders and objectives on the way here, but this is where you get the big picture. Viramond is to be taken back under direct Imperial rule from Golgotha, by any and all means necessary. The local populace has been practicing forbidden forms of democracy, making their own policy, deciding their own lives, and defying standard Imperial edicts. According to the steward of the Deathstalker standing, Viramond's lord, David Deathstalker, has proven a weak and ineffectual leader. Disregarding his duties and offices, not only failing to stamp out this treason, but actually encouraging it. He is declared a traitor, and his lordship revoked. He is to be removed from office, and he and his companion, the Lord Kit Summerisle, are to be brought back to Golgotha to stand trial. We expect there to be resistance. The Deathstalker and the Summerisle are both warriors of some note, and we have reason to believe there has been considerable infiltration of the local populace by rebel agents. The entire population of Viramond is therefore to be pacified and brought under direct Imperial control by any and all means necessary. This is to be a punitive mission, an example to others. A high death rate is to be expected. The Lord Wolf is in charge of the Imperial war machines, assisted by Professor Wax of Golgotha University. The professor cannot be with us right now. Apparently he doesn't travel well. We can only hope his condition improves once we get him dirtside. The Lord Dryam is in charge of the ground troops, a full army of marines and troopers who will take out the population centers and ready them for occupation by further troops. Captain, investigator, security officer, you are personally responsible for capturing the Deathstalker in the Summerisle and bringing them back alive, if at all possible. Her Majesty has set her heart on putting them on trial. I will liaise among the three operations, coordinating your efforts. Lord Wolf, you are to concentrate on the urban areas. Lord Dram, you will deal with the more scattered rural communities. Let's all try very hard not to trip over each other. I want this done by the numbers, calmly and efficiently. This is a punitive mission, but let us not forget that dead peasants can't work. Now, let us discuss the logistics.
As a major food production world, Viramond was too valuable to be scorched, but its people could still be punished. The peasants must know their place, and what would happen to any who tried to rise above it. The wild card in all this was Valentine with his war machines. This would be the first time they had ever been used in a major operation. The Empress had always been intrigued by the potential of war machines, and they'd performed well in practice, but only a few had ever been tried and tested in the fires of battle. Viramond would change that. And how well they did would decide Valentine's future in the court and in the Empire. Eventually, the last compromise was agreed on, the last detail ironed out, and they had a war plan everyone could live with. Beckett gave them as brief a pep talk as he could get away with. They all said God bless the Empress in a loud voice, and the meeting broke up.
If it wasn't for my crew, I'd tell the Iron Bitch to go to hell.
Silence didn't care whether the ship's security was listening.
To the best of my knowledge, neither the Deathstalker nor Kid Death has ever been defeated in combat. Hell, they took on all comers in the arenas, until no one would face them anymore.
They never met us before. We can take them, Captain. Assuming we can locate them before the invasion proper begins and everything goes to hell in a handcart.
I wish I shared your confidence. I don't even know why the Empress wanted me here.
You're our lucky charm. Just stay back out of the way and we'll do all the work.
Gladly.
Stomach hoped they couldn't tell that he was lying. He knew exactly why the Empress wanted him on Viramond. For some time now, Silence and Frost had been displaying near superhuman qualities in their missions. They were faster, stronger, and more capable than they had any right to be. Ever since their encounter with the enigmatic alien device known as the Madness Maze on Lost Hayden, they had demonstrated powers and abilities that bordered on the miraculous, not to mention psionic. The Empress had no intention of letting rogue espers of such potential run around loose, so this mission, with its many obvious dangers, had been arranged for Silence and Frost, specifically to bring out their powers. And Stelmach would be right there to study and report on them. And it was tearing Stelmach apart. He thought of Silence and even Frost as his friends, but he couldn't defy orders that came directly from the Iron Throne. So he kept his mouth shut, fretted till his stomach cramped, and tried constantly to discover some way out of his predicament that wouldn't get him killed either by the Empress or his friends.
What have we sunk to? Paid assassins in all but name. All that nonsense about bringing them in alive to stand trial was just a smokescreen. They know we'll never be able to defeat them without killing them. We're supposed to kill them to save the embarrassment of bringing two lords and heads of their respective families to trial. We should be fighting the real enemies. The Deathstalker and the Summer Isle are just a couple of kids with too much time on their hands. The Empire's real enemies are the Rebel Underground. Owen Deathstalker and his people. Lionstone doesn't take them seriously enough. You saw what happened on the Wolfling world. What Owen and his people have become. I don't even know if they're still human anymore. They're the real danger. And that's the only reason I'm doing this. Because we need to be back in a position to protect the Empress from the coming rebellion. She needs us, whether she wants to admit it or not.
Pervs! Can't understand how that didn't get a response.
I'm thinking to do. He sat down in his favorite lounger and turned on the massage program. He thought best when his body was well taken care of. He and his family were in deep trouble, and as always, it was up to him to dig them out. Clan Wolf had lost the new Star Drive contract when they lost their Star Drive factory to the rebels on Technos 3, but Valentine still had his secret contacts with the rogue AIs on Shub, and the unparalleled high-tech they provided him had offered a way out of his dilemma. He presented some of it to Lionstone as a gift to show his worth and loyalty, and then pointed out that his mastery of such tech made him the perfect choice to be in charge of the war machines in their first practical trials. And as simple as that, he was back in favor again. Of course, his staying in favor depended on how well the machines performed on Viramond, but he didn't foresee any problems there. Once he'd made a good showing here, Clan Wolf would be placed in charge of war machine production, and he could take his place at Lionstone's side again. Of course, there were other problems. Ever since the debacle on Technos 3, his sister Stephanie and his brother Daniel had been missing. This was both good and bad news. Good in the sense that they weren't around to stick knives in his back anymore, and bad in that he couldn't be sure what they were up to now. The other fly in his ointment was Professor Ignatius Wax, cybernetics expert from the University of Golgotha. He'd been responsible for designing most of the war machines to be used on Viramond, so Valentine had been forced to accept his assistance. Even though he knew the professor was really only there to spy on him, to try and learn the source of the revolutionary new tech Valentine had provided, He posed no real threat. There was no way he'd be able to penetrate the mysteries of Shub technology. Still, the man had proved to be very irritating. So Valentine had taken steps to ensure that the good professor wouldn't distract him while he was working down on Viramond. Very amusing steps. Valentine smiled happily. He would lead his machines to victory on Viramond, falling upon cities and razing them to the ground, and Lionstone would love him again. And then, let his enemies beware. In his cabin, the man who wasn't really the Lord High Dram paced up and down, scowling. This would be his first attempt at commanding troops in the field, and he wasn't looking forward to it. He'd studied up on it as best he could without raising suspicions, but no amount of theoretical knowledge could substitute for hands-on experience. The original Dram had led troops on many occasions to great success, but the original Dram had been killed on Hayden, also known as the Wolfling World. Now his clone had to carry on the role, lest anyone suspect the truth. He had to be Dram, do as he did. He was in charge of the pacification of the peasants, and Lionstone had made it very clear that he had to be successful, whatever the cost. It didn't help that his own men distrusted him. Apparently the original Dram had been something of a monster, hard and unyielding, and always ready to sacrifice his own men if that was what it took to ensure victory. That was how he'd first acquired the whispered nickname Widowmaker. But if he could bring this off, pacify the peasants, regain control of food production, and lead his troops to victory in the sight of all, Lionstone had promised he would be rewarded with the lordship of Viramond. So he had a lot to play for. He leaned back in his chair and closed his eyes. He wished he could make the rest of his world disappear so easily. After the trauma, tears, and hard, bloody work of covering three war zones in a row, journalist Toby Schreck and his cameraman Flynn had asked for a story they could cover without getting shot at. The Underground Council offered them a mission to make a study of the peaceful rustic society of Viramond, currently menaced by the growing mechanization of farm worlds. It was early evening when the two men arrived on Viramond, with dark shades of red among the darkening clouds above. Toby and Flynn walked up and down outside the Dacre farmhouse where they were to stay. The farmhouse was a large, blocky stone building with primitive guttering and a thatched roof, so old that no one in the present family could remember exactly how old it was. Toby just knew, without having to be told, that this was the kind of place that only had an outside toilet. He smiled at the farmhouse and made polite comments, while privately thinking it looked drafty as hell. The surrounding countryside wasn't exactly what he'd been hoping for either. It was mainly moorland, with white and purple heather, grazing land for the countless animals spread out between the farmhouse and the far horizon. It looked pleasant enough, but decidedly bleak. Not at all the kind of place you could hope to get much sunbathing done. Toby sighed inwardly and paid attention to his hosts. Adrian Dacre, the head of the family, was a short, round fellow with close-cropped gray hair, knowing blue eyes, and a constant friendly smile wrapped around a clay pipe. His wife was a large, fat woman called Diana, with red cheeks, freckles, and hair so red it all but glowed. The Dacres led them into the farmhouse kitchen and sat them down at the table. Adrian and Diana then bustled around, getting a hot meal ready. Adrian covered the heavy wooden table with a blindingly white tablecloth and shyly set out what was obviously the best plates and cutlery, only used for guests. Diana hovered over her black iron oven like a mother hen, lifting saucepan lids to check the contents, and assuring Toby and Flynn that she'd have had a hot meal ready and waiting for them, but the Underground had been very vague as to when they'd be arriving. Toby could understand that. The Rebel Council had never impressed him with their efficiency. He sat back and looked happily around him. The kitchen was small without seeming cramped, and comfortably warm and cozy. Shelves on the walls were packed to bursting with a lifetime's collection of knick-knacks, obviously handmade, some of them astonishingly cute and vulgar. Adrian produced a stone jar of thick, dark cider and poured generous doses into porcelain mugs shaped like fat old men. Adrian explained that these were known as Toby jugs, and they all laughed. though Toby didn't see the point of the joke at all. Several animals shared the kitchen with the humans, apparently through long rite and custom. There were three dogs with gray and silver muzzles, too old now to guard or control sheep, half a dozen cats of various snootiness, and a couple of daft chickens who wandered round bumping into things. These latter took an inordinate interest in Toby and Flynn's ankles, pecking at them in a curious way, until Diana stopped what she was doing to put the chickens' heads under their wings. They promptly assumed that because it was now dark, it must be night, and went to sleep where they stood. The dogs sniffed hopefully at the smells of cooking in the air, but were too well trained to make nuisances of themselves. One of them came up to Toby, sat down before him, pawed at his leg, then put his head on Toby's knee to have his head scratched. Toby did so, cautiously. He didn't have much experience with animals at close quarters, but the dog's tail thumped heavily against the stone floor, so he assumed he must be doing it right. In fact, he rather liked it. Flynn had won over the cats, and two snuggled in his lap while a third perched on his shoulder. Flynn talked cheerful nonsense to them, and they purred back happily. What worried Toby was that the damn things appeared to be listening. The meal finally arrived, simple food, lots of it, piping hot. Toby thought it was the best he'd ever had, and said so loudly, which earned him another large helping. He demolished that in record time, too, and was seriously considering the possibility of a third when the dessert arrived. Heavy chocolate sponge pudding with thick white chocolate sauce. Toby thought he'd died and gone to heaven. Eventually, he reached the point where even he couldn't eat any more. He sat back, undid his belt another notch, and sighed happily. This was looking to be a great assignment. Adrian Dacre grinned at Toby.
Soon as I saw you, I knew you were a man who liked his food. Don't you worry, son. The wife will feed you up good and proper while you're here. She loves to see your cooking being properly appreciated.
Quite excellent,
Flynn said from under his cats. He'd eaten one helping of everything and was quietly content.
And this is just part of what we stand to lose if mechanization continues. This kind of life. Simple food and simple pleasures. No less important for that. The whole way of life is under threat, if the rumors are true. I hope you'll make that clear in your report.
Delighted to. I think we'll start with some footage of you and your family working a farm. How many of you are there?
7 sons, 3 daughters. Good strapping lads and bonny lasses. The boys are still out working the land. You'll meet them later. Liz and Meg's work in town, but they'll drop by tomorrow to say hello. Good-looking girls, if I do say so myself. Be married already if they weren't so choosy. I don't suppose either of you two gentlemen...
Leave them alone, Mother. That's not what they're here for. There's one other daughter, Alice, but I don't expect you'll see much of her. She's taken up with a young death stalker and spends most of her time in his company.
What's he like? He's one of the things we were sent here to cover.
Adrian shrugged and began packing the bowl of his pipe with dark, aromatic strands of tobacco.
Yeah, seems harmless enough. Handsome, rich, and luckily for us, mostly uninterested in interfering in the way things are. Best we could hope for, I suppose. Bit of a feather in our cap that he's taken a shine to our Alice.
Oh, they don't want to know about that, Father. They want to know what we've been doing with democracy here. That's what got the Golgotha Underground interested in us, right? Thought so. We began trying our luck when Owen was the death stalker, seeing what we could get away with. Owen didn't care. He wasn't much in those days. He was happy with his mistress and his studies and didn't want to be bothered with us. Steward wasn't too keen, but without Owen's backing, he couldn't do anything. We began small, adding one small victory to another until we reached where we are today. We have regular elections for town offices. Most of the decisions about farming and livestock are made at the local level. We've all been making a lot more money since we started making our own deals with the shipping companies. We run our own lives now, as much as that's possible in the Empire these days. Stewart isn't happy, but Deveet Deathstalker's actually been encouraging us. Though I'd be surprised if he knew half of what goes on out in the towns and the farmlands. He and his young friend the Summer Isle are more interested in hunting, drinking, and wenching. Not necessarily in that order.
She and her husband shared rich chuckles over that. Toby wasn't so sure.
Tell me about the Summer Isle.
Adrian frowned for the first time.
Well, damned if we know what to make of that one, eh, Mother? Good-looking, polite, doesn't throw his weight around more than you'd expect, but he's a cold one. Hard to tell what's going on inside his head. He came here once with David to pick up our Alice. The dogs took one look at the Summer Isle and hid under the table. Wouldn't come out till he'd gone. I felt a bit like joining them, to be honest. There was something about his eyes, like he'd just as soon kill me as not. Wouldn't surprise me if there was bad blood in that one. At court, they call him Kid Death, the smiling killer. Can't say as I'm surprised.
Adrian scowled, searching for the right words.
It's not like he's done anything or said anything that a man could take offense to, but he's a dangerous man, or I never saw one. Don't know what the Deathstalker sees in him, but they seem close enough. Always together.
Bit too close, if you ask me.
Now, Mother.
Do you think the Deathstalker will object to our presence here?
Adrian raised an eyebrow.
I thought he was supposed to be sympathetic to the underground.
He was, but he's distanced himself of late. I suppose being given absolute control over an entire planet will do that to you.
I doubt he'll interrupt his play just because you're here. But I think we'd better keep the steward distracted till you're gone. He's a hard man. An empire man through and through. Bows to everything with a title and lords it over us like he was a blue blood himself. Thinks he's better than us. Damned fool. I can remember him growing up on a farm not 20 miles from here. No, you two just get on with your work. We'll see you're not interfered with.
Look forward to seeing it when it's finished. The wife and I are big fans of yours. Very impressed we were with your Technos 3 coverage.
You saw that?
Flynn quietly discouraged another cat from climbing up on its head.
We've got a hollow screen. You're not out in the sticks here, you know.
A loud chiming came from the next room. Adrian and Diana looked around, startled.
Speak of the devil. That's the underground signal. Means there's a message coming in. Can't say I was expecting anything.
Oh, I expect they just want to speak with these two. Make sure they got here in one piece.
No doubt, Mother. I'll just check.
He got up and went into the next room, calmly puffing on his pipe. When he returned a few moments later, the pipe was in his hand, and the peacefulness was gone from his face. He spoke to Toby and Flynn.
You better come through. They want to talk to you. Mother, call the boys in. We best prepare. Word is, bad things are coming.
Diana got up without a word and headed for the outside door. Toby and Flynn dumped their various cats and dogs and followed Adrian into the next room, where a large hollow screen covered half a wall. An unfamiliar face looked out of the screen at them.
Shrek! Flynn! You have to leave now. It's not safe for you anymore.
Why? What's happened? Have the Dakers been compromised? Does the Empire know we're here?
None of that matters anymore. The shit is about to hit the fan for all of Viramond if it hasn't already begun. Leave while you still can. Empire troops will be hitting ground any time now, all over the planet. The Stevie Blues are already dirt side to represent us to the local rebels. They should be heading in your direction. See if you can hook up with them. If not, try to get to the Standing. Maybe the Deathstalker can protect you till we can arrange safe passage off-world for you.
But why? What's happening?
The Empress has outlawed David Deathstalker for allowing his peasants to experiment with democracy. The entire planet is to be placed under martial law by any and all means necessary. The populace is considered to be in rebellion. Every man, woman, and child on Viramond is to be placed under constraint and then tried, exiled, or executed. 3 Imperial Star Cruisers are already in orbit over Viramond. More are on their way. Troops are already landing. And the Empress has authorized extensive use of war machines. It's going to get hard and vicious and bloody real soon now. Get out of there. Now.
The screen went blank. In the kitchen, the dogs were barking loudly, sensing the excitement and alarm. Turley and Flynn looked at each other.
Well, so much for our trying to avoid a war zone. Do we head for the Standing?
I guess so. The Stevie Blues could be anywhere, and the Standing isn't that far from here. Maybe we can get some good footage of the fighting along the way. Just so this mission isn't a complete failure. You know, just once, I'd like things to go the way I planned them.
Flynn shrugged.
That's life. Our life, anyway. We'd better say goodbye to our hosts and get moving. We've no way of knowing how near the troops are.
They went back into the kitchen. The dogs were running around excitedly. The cats were perched on high shelves, watching everything with wise, experienced eyes. Adrian Dacre had pushed the heavy table aside and opened up a concealed trap door in the floor. There were wooden steps leading down into a secret cellar. Adrian was emerging from the dark hole with an armful of weapons. He nodded calmly to Toby and Flynn and dropped the weapons on the table, next to those he'd already brought up. There were lots of them, mostly projectile weapons and boxes of ammunition, with a few hand energy weapons. Set on a farmhouse table, they looked pretty impressive, but Toby knew they were nothing compared to an invading army backed up by war machines.
Better get out of here, boys. It'll be getting noisy around here soon. It seems the rebellion started a little early.
Will you be safe here?
Safe as anywhere.
Adrian stripped guns of their protective coverings with quick, professional movements.
They'll need an army to storm this place. And with Mother and our boys beside me, the Empire will pay dearly in blood and suffering for the taking of our land. This has been Dacre land for countless generations, and they'll not take it from us, whether there's a bullet left to fire or a Dacre left to fire it. Go on now, while it's still quiet. Head you north from here, and that'll take you to the Standing. You'll find a flyer in the stables behind the house. Energy crystals are a bit low, but they should get you most of the way there. Stay low and try to keep out of sight. The locals won't know who you are. You might end up getting shot at by both sides. Good luck, boys.
The outer door burst open, and Diana came rushing in, her eyes wide. She gestured urgently with a comm unit in her hand.
I can't raise the boys. The channel's open, but none of them are answering.
From far away in the distance came the sound of an explosion, followed almost immediately by another. They all hurried outside, Adrian grabbing a gun from the table. Outside in the farmyard, twilight was falling. The sound of energy guns discharging was clear and plain in the quiet. Out on the heathered moor, the animals were running confusedly this way and that. Far away, someone was screaming. Diana Dacre moved to stand close beside her husband, who was hugging his gun to his chest like a talisman.
My boys. My poor boys.